The cobblestone streets in the old city reminded Anya of paintings made by starving artists that depicted a mood, but not necessarily a real place or event. Brick walls on either side of the narrow street were decked out in graffiti worthy of a museum exhibit. Strung here and there were clotheslines flying laundry. Moorish influence showed in the decorative tiles around the window frames. Iron staircases hugged the walls, and rickety tin planters overflowed with flamboyant flowers. The yellow-tiled cupola of the Baroque Cadiz Cathedral loomed high above the street. Anya pushed open an intricate black wrought iron gate, taking a narrow alleyway towards San Pedro. She kept an eye out for the house with the antiquities knockoffs. Anya stopped dead in her tracks when she came face to face with a bull. A real, live, very large bull. He had the blackest eyes and horns. His hide was red. The bull flicked his tail in the classic manner all animals use to broadcast anger. His shoulders were as wide as a draft horse, and he stood in the middle of the street, eyeing her as if she wore a magenta and yellow cape. Where the bull had come from was impossible to guess. Anya hadn't heard hooves on cobblestone. The last turn she'd taken had been through the gate, and that gate was now closed. No time to wonder who had it in for her by closing her in with a 1,000-pound beast. An uncaged bull stood staring her down. Anya noted his size and the huge morillo muscle at the back of his neck.
This bad boy was bred for the ring.
A bull bred for the ring would fight for his life and use his horns against any threat. And if the bull truly were corrida bred, this may be the first time he'd seen a human on foot. Anya flexed her fingers and cautiously took 3 steps backward. Who would waste a bull on her? Couldn't be bred for the corrida. Had to be one of those bulls used in the novillerado fights for amateurs. She could hope. The instinct to draw her sword was strangely absent. This threat was not premeditated on the innocent bull's part. The bull charged. Feeling the ground thunder beneath the bull's hooves, Anya knew he would gain on her, and the bull did. She smelled the manure and animal musk close behind her. Dodging to the right, she sensed the bull followed. Anya was the target. He went after what moved, so she should stop. But she wasn't stupid. Anya leaped and grabbed the bottom step of a second-floor iron staircase attached to the side of a limestone building. Something skinned her boot, twisting her ankle painfully. A horn. The bull came to a stop. He turned, searching for her, for anything that moved, while she held her knees up tight to her chest, dangling above his massive bulk. Clotheslines fluttered 3 feet above Anya's head. Thank goodness the clothes' movement was far enough out of the bull's visual range not to provoke him. Anya noticed 2 men approaching at the same time the bull's head swung around.
Get out of here!
The men took 1 look at the bull and crept slowly back into the connecting alleyway. The bull charged them. Anya eyed the laundry. A fluttery red and pink skirt would prove just the thing. Anya pulled her body up, kicked out, and flung herself upward. She grabbed the skirt by the hem, and it tugged at the line as she dropped to the ground. The clothespin didn't release the skirt. Instead, the whole line fell, blanketing her with clothing. Anya tugged the clothes off.
Hey!
She got the attention of the bull, who couldn't fit his broad shoulders through the narrow alley where the men had escaped. The bull whipped his tail angrily. He trotted away from Anya and down the street. She didn't mind that the animal was moving away from her, but she did care about any unsuspecting people who might get caught in the bull's path. They could be injured or even killed.
I hope this works.
Dashing down the street and alongside the bull, Anya sped up beyond him by 5 yards and swirled the skirt to get his attention. The bull sighted the flash of fabric and veered toward it, sweeping the skirt aside and high, then flicking her arm behind her body. The bull passed wide on her right side, a safe 4 feet away from her. Twisting, she saw the bull hadn't turned to search for the cape again.
Hey!
It is her, senorita.
Anya turned and saw one of the men who had fled the bull's path lingering in the alleyway. The bull swung his head toward where the man hid. The bull could turn quicker than a polo pony despite his massive bulk. Anya hoped to redirect the bull's attention. It worked.
Senor, please call for someone who can manage this. I'll try to keep him in one spot.
Already done. I sent my friend. A retired bullfighter lives not far from here. Watch out, senorita.
The bull thundered toward her, horns down. He was aiming for her leg, because that was where she held the skirt. Quickly, Anya flicked out the fabric. She jumped to the side to put her body out of the bull's line. Not exactly a matador's calm, defiant stance, but she was no torero. A horn snagged the fabric, pulling it out of her hand. Anya now stood alone in the alley with a bull, now shaking his head in an attempt to dislodge the bright cloth flapping from his horn. On the bull's flank, she noted the brand, a half circle above a bar. If she survived, she intended to track down the bull's origins. Pre-adolescent cheers caught her attention. Down the alley, where she had turned to enter the street, several young boys had pushed open the iron gate, skipping along and toting a rope. Unaware of the bull, they took up position at the end of the street and laid out the rope in preparation for some sort of game.
No!
The bull was still struggling to free himself from the skirt.
Boys! Chicos!
They didn't hear her.
Is the torero on his way?
I haven't heard from my friend. I will try to find another cape.
No, don't!
He couldn't help her. She didn't want to involve anyone else in this incredible danger. She didn't need the man's help. The bull stomped a hoof down on the skirt, and with a shake of his head, finally tore it off his horn. The skirt dropped to the ground in shreds. The animal looked down the alley and shifted his back legs. He had seen the children. Without hesitation, Anya dashed alongside the bull, who was beginning to move. Out of suitable alternatives, Anya manifested the sword. Unflinching, she stabbed the bull in the bulging muscle behind the neck, much like the mounted picadors did with their long spears. The bull twisted his head in aggravation. He slowed to a stop and then charged her, head down and left horn aimed for her thigh. Anya leaped and rolled in the air, landing with both feet planted behind the bewildered bull. She waved her free hand, but his attention was no longer on her. The bull lifted his head, leathery black nostrils sniffing the air. The boys playing at the end of the street jumped over the rope on the ground, picking up stones as they landed on one foot. The boys looked up. Panicking, they backed against the iron gate that blocked the end of the street. Anya again bypassed the bull, running toward the children, who had been accompanied by a woman she only now noticed. Anya stopped 30 feet in front of the children and turned. She waited for the bull to come to her. The bull walked a few steps, his tail flicking fiercely. He was assessing his opponent. Adrenaline racing, Anya waved her hands and walked toward the danger, angling slightly to the side. She hated leaving a path open toward the children, but if the bull followed movement, then perhaps she could lure him away. The bull charged. Gripping the sword with both hands, she raised it high above her head, blade pointed down. Anya jumped high. She brought the sword tip down and pushed it hard into the bull's back, slightly left of the spine. She didn't hit bone. Landing with a hand on the bull's side, she pushed off from the sweat-slick red hide and again landed against a brick wall, bracing herself with her hands. The bull remained standing. She may have missed the aorta completely. A coup de grace at the base of the brain might be necessary. Turning, she waved her hands to keep the bull's attention on her and not the screaming boys. Anya slapped the bull's side and he whipped around to charge her. The battle sword remained deeply embedded in the bull's back. Anya dodged and changed her trajectory to the right. The bull managed to follow her, his tongue lolling and blood spilling from the sword's entry point. Anya miscalculated the distance. She connected with the wall. The bull was on her, his hooves punishing the cobblestone. His hot breath on her arm, she turned to meet the bull's forehead and nose as he butted up against her stomach. Gently. The acrid scent of blood and musk nearly overwhelmed her. Toes pushing upward, she couldn't gain another inch of space between her and the beast. She pressed her palms against the bull's forehead, but it was as if she was pushing an iron statue cemented into the ground. The bull lifted his head weakly, dragging his wet nose along her hip. And then he faltered, wobbling backward. A horn tore her pant leg. Anya pushed against the flat head. The bull's legs shook. Drool spilled out of his open mouth. His eyelids shuttered. The bull was dying because of her. The bull fell to his knees, releasing her from the horned prison against the wall. Anya stumbled forward. She grabbed the sword hilt and pulled it out of the bull's back. Anya released the sword to the other wearer. The bull's head dropped, and he tumbled to his side. Anya's shoulders were jostled as men cheered for her stunning prowess in defeating the bull. Her eyes tracked to the children who were being claimed one by one by adults who swept the boys to safety. Anya lowered her head and pushed through the crowd that had begun to circle the fallen bull. She cleared the street and turned the corner to stand against the door of a closed candy store. When Anya got back to her hotel room, she pulled out her cell phone and saw that she had new messages. She checked them. One from Doug Morrell, her producer at Chasing History's Monsters, one from Garin Braden, and another from an unlisted number. The unlisted number intrigued her. She tossed her phone on the bed. Anya sat on the edge of the bed and stretched her poor, put-upon back. Only now did she remember the tear in her pants and, for the first time, noticed the blood. She now found a 6-inch abrasion across her upper thigh. The bull's horn had gotten her, and Anya hadn't even been aware of it. Digging through her backpack, she pulled out some alcohol prep pads and cleaned the wound. She'd survive. Anya called up the sword. The blade gleamed. It never came back to her, showing any blood or damage. She had killed with this sword. Although it had been necessary for her survival and to protect innocent people, it hurt sometimes to consider the consequences. She tried not to dwell on that. Rue claimed that the sword had chosen her. Anya believed that to her marrow.
Where did the bull come from?
Someone had to have opened the gate and pushed the bull through. The image of the bull's brand haunted her, but she couldn't bring herself to pull up a search on the laptop. She had pressed her palms to the bull's head and had felt his end. He hadn't chosen to be used as a weapon, or to have his first taste of freedom en route to his death. She pressed the flat of the blade to her forehead, comforted by the cool steel. Anya couldn't escape the feeling that today she had abused her power. Anya bolted upright in bed. A woman in a red and black flamenco dress leaned against the door. Anya still held the sword.
That's some big steel. Don't worry, I didn't come to duel. Though that would be fun, wouldn't it? Dueling? Whatever happened to dueling?
It went out during the Enlightenment, when drunken fops battling to the death tended to walk themselves into their enemies' rapiers.
We Spaniards would never have dueled drunk. When we call someone out, we mean business.
Not wanting to share with Ava the sword's disappearing trick, Anya set it aside on the bed.
I heard you killed a bull with that sword. Rescued some kids.
News travels fast.
Faster than the internet in this old neighborhood. A man can slap his wife and walk out the door, and by the time he reaches the end of the street, a posse of housewives wielding cast-iron frying pans stands waiting for him. So how does it feel to kill?
Not right.
Good. You may be a better person than I had thought.
You let yourself in. You must have good reason.
Anya stood and paced to the balcony door, aware that Ava had approached the bed to look at the sword.
Looks a couple centuries old, but I'm no expert. A battle sword isn't an easy weapon to get through customs.
True enough. So, the reason for your visit?
I thought you'd left the city. Why are you still here?
I like the sun. Have you come to tell me to leave Cadiz? I'm not keen on threats.
I guessed that about you, but I will warn you to stay out of my way.
And that way leads to Manuel Bravo?
The Matador is in deeper than he can imagine. In the ring, he's a maestro. Outside the ring, he isn't very smart.
Sounds like you have more against the guy than the suspicion that he killed your friend.
Diego wasn't a friend, just a guitar player.
And who are you?
I'm a dancer. You didn't notice the costume?
A dancer who carries a knife at the back of her skirt and shoots a sniper rifle with military proficiency. And who has a very close relationship with the police.
The police? I don't think so.
Then why haven't they arrested you? I gave them an exact description, including that tattoo. If I found you, the authorities shouldn't have any trouble.
The police are stupid.
Do you know Cesar Soto? Tell me about the tattoo on your wrist. I wasn't able to find any reference to it online.
It's my tribute to Nemesis.
The goddess of divine retribution? A strong female warrior.
Why the gender label? Can't she simply be a strong warrior, like Boudica, or Athena, or Joan of Arc?
I'll grant you that. Did you get the tattoo during your stint with Special Forces? It doesn't really conform to military dress code, does it?
I had the tattoo done after a bad breakup. It was the Matador's assistant who set the bull after you.
Cristo?
Uh-huh. Did you see the brand?
Half circle above a bar.
The bull was from Cristo's ranch. El Bravo considers his bulls unworthy of the ring. The two argue incessantly about that.
Cristo was there the day I visited Manuel's villa. I didn't notice any animosity between the men.
Cristo can't sell his bulls to the corridas. They share Bravo's low opinion, so Cristo needs the money he gets working for Bravo. The man believes that someday the Matador will use one of his toros. They have a twisted relationship, if you ask me.
Why would Cristo set a bull after me? Because Bravo asked him to?
Exactly.
Manuel Bravo strikes me as someone who never asks others to do his dirty work for him.
He removes obstacles from his path. With a sweep of his cape, El Bravo can direct a charging bull toward death. He does it for a living, Creed. You cannot trust him.
I think I can't trust you. Or the police.
Never trust the police, especially not regarding the corrida. Are you aware of Cesar Soto and El Bravo's relationship?
Were they once competitors?
Soto would never have been considered anyone's competition. He has weak ankles. He could never stand before the bull without his legs shaking. He was badly injured.
I've noticed his limp.
El Bravo's father had been training Cesar when it happened. A bull gored him in the thigh, went all the way through and damaged the muscles permanently. Manuel's father could never get over the guilt. He's been supporting Soto since.
Really? Like paying his rent?
Yes.
His bills?
Everything. Except now, the burden has fallen on Manuel's shoulders. He is now the primary supporter of the family. And in this country, family pride is everything.
Does Soto return the favor by overlooking El Bravo's indiscretions?
Now you're using your brain.
How do you know so much about the torero?
Clearly you haven't done enough snooping. Remain in Cadiz at your own risk.
Is that a threat?
Not at all. I'm dancing at the Gato Negro in a few hours. Stop by for a drink. That was a threat.
Anya's skin crawled. She felt as if Ava had cursed her.
So Soto and Bravo are indebted to each other. Interesting.
And that Ava knew so much about their relationship added a new twist to the mystery. Somehow, the three were tied together. Clearly, one of them had been her lover.
Is that why she took a shot at Bravo?
Garin glared at the guard standing in front of the steel door to the seaside office. The necklace lackey had been placed there to pat down everyone who entered, which Garin understood. He locked eyes with the bruiser, who stood as tall as he was.
Drake expects me.
The guard let his gaze, hidden behind dark sunglasses, drop to Garin's chest, where he could be concealing a weapon, and was. Garin favored a Heckler & Koch tactical lately. With a nod, the guard stepped aside and opened the door.
Braden!
The enthusiastic welcome came from somewhere beyond a forest of ferns and palms, set before a panoramic window with a breathtaking view of the Atlantic Ocean. Garin strolled into the luxurious office, waiting for the door to close behind him, then unbuttoned his suit coat and shrugged his shoulders. He'd been going casual the past few days, so suiting up this morning felt restrictive.
I've made tea. It's brewed. Help yourself. I'm almost finished.
Garin poured a cup of tea that filled the air with sharp punches of cinnamon, clove, and anise. He settled into an armless leather chair before a massive granite desk. The thin, tall man appeared, his sleeves rolled up. The red silk shirt he wore matched the red in his cheeks, due to an extreme sun allergy, Garin knew. Hannibal Drake did all his gardening indoors. The man pulled off his gardening gloves and tossed them onto the desk, gesturing to the miniature forest.
Think I've been watering them too much. Rot is setting in. You like the brew? I have it sent from Nepal.
Spicy. Heats the throat going down.
Indeed. And it's good for the circulation.
Garin set the fragile teacup on the desk in front of him.
So you're into gardening and tea now?
It calms me. Or it's supposed to.
Drake moved the gloves to a steel table on wheels that was stocked with garden supplies and poured himself a cup, adding an unhealthy dose of sugar.
My physician says I'm to cultivate serenity in my life.
How's that working for you?
Not bad at all. Oh, this stuff is awful. Just can't get the knack for tea. It always tastes like weakly flavored water with bits of stick in it. Don't tell me you actually like it.
I've tasted better brews. Usually the sort to bear a wax seal that boasts of its mellow age.
Right.
Drake veered toward the wet bar behind Garin and poured two tumblers of brandy, neat.
If anything will bring me serenity, it is this.
Garin tilted back the golden spirits Drake handed him and guessed it was some fine stuff. Smooth, smoky, and sultry. Just like the perfect woman.
Send me your supplier's information. This is worth stocking up with a few cases.
I will. Hell, I'll send you a case. You catch a fight while you're in town?
Of course. El Bravo is a good friend.
Hannibal opened a desk drawer and pulled out a flat wooden box. He set the box on the desk and met Garin's eyes.
Ah, yes, I know the Torero. That's excellent. You choose your friends carefully.
Present company included. So, what do you have for me?
The man slid the box across the desk and sat back without a word. He swirled the tumbler, watching as Garin lifted the lid. Inside, arranged carefully on black velvet, lay a necklace that had been crafted in the late 19th century during the Art Nouveau period. The metalwork was hand-chased brass, pounded and polished to represent acanthus leaves and ivy. Rubies highlighted the curved motion of the piece, but did not overwhelm it. They were only there to catch the light and draw the eye to the pendant. As a centerpiece, the ivory pendant was half as large as Garin's palm. The porcelain oval had been hand-painted and depicted a Rubenesque woman with Titian hair spilling down her shoulders, eyes closed. The lips were parted, and she held a ribbon across her lower lip, an expression of ecstasy no man would ever mistake. Garin touched the pendant, careful not to press too hard or get the oils from his fingers on the paint. A piece this old, in watercolors, could easily be damaged. He traced a finger along the woman's face. He'd almost forgotten those lips. The necklace stirred his memory, the way her mouth would curve on one side in laughter, just waiting to be kissed. Garin closed the lid.
Is it the one?
Yes, this is the one. How much do you want?
I'm a friend. 100,000.
Deal.
Garin placed the box on his lap and pulled out his cell phone.
I'll wire the money to you. Give me the account number.
In less than 5 minutes, Garin had a new trinket. No, not new, but a familiar piece he'd lost long ago.
A pretty piece.
Hannibal rose, gesturing for Garin to follow him to the window. With the box tucked under his arm, Garin joined his friend and marveled at the view. A white sand beach intersected with a shipping dock to the left of Hannibal's office. The dock couldn't obscure the blue water, which glinted with sunlight.
I often study the objects that pass through my hands, especially the ones with portraits. Who do you suppose that woman was?
No clue.
Some memories Garin had to keep sacred. His attention was diverted to the left. Sunlight glinted off a warehouse fronted by a parking lot, crowded with rusted shipping containers, when its steel doors rose to admit a forklift driver. Inside, a bustle of workers moved around crates of a certain size and shape that Garin suspected contained guns. Along any shoreline around the world, you could find that kind of underhanded operation. Hell, it served a man well to have such a few places on his contact list. You never knew when they might come in handy.
It's not what you're thinking. There are no guns in that warehouse. But if you're on the market for weaponry...
Not at the moment. If not guns, what are they moving down there?
Artifacts. Small-time. Bunch of junk, if you ask me. Though they do bring in the occasional treasure. I have first pick, which pleases me to no end, because that leaves, well, someone else in the lurch.
First to the treasure walks away with the spoils.
And in this town you'll find a whole nest of vultures eager to pick through the spoils. Most of the hypocrites work for the university or the local museum. Now, if you're looking for something a little older and more interesting to display in your office...
I've already put a small fortune in your pocket today, Drake. It was good to see you. Thanks for this.
I've kept an eye peeled for it for years. I'm delighted to have finally found it for you. I'll send the brandy to your place in Berlin.
Looking forward to it. Good afternoon, Drake.
Garin left the office and decided to drive around the building to get a better view of the warehouse. The workers shuffling around outside weren't very covert, though at a glance someone might guess they were merely shipping ordinary crated goods. Garin picked out an armed guard on the rooftop, a semi-automatic slung over his shoulder. Again, not covert at all.
Artifacts. And Anya Creed's current mess, as usual, involves stolen artifacts. Should I or shouldn't I?
Garin weighed his options. Her insinuation that El Bravo could have something to do with the guitarist's murder had insulted him. Perhaps after a cigar and another brandy back at the villa, he would decide what to tell Anya, if anything. The plaza the museum was on was lined with palm, locust, and banana trees. The narrow, tight streets here all led to big, beautiful plazas. Elizabethan architectural influences were everywhere. Pair that with the Moorish tilework and traces of the Gothic, Baroque, and Renaissance, and a girl could get lost in her admiration of a cupola here or an arched entrance there. So Anya didn't notice that the car on the street heading toward her didn't swerve to avoid her until the front fender was just 6 feet away. Anya leaned into the parked car to her right. She levered herself up and did a somersault over the hood of the car as the moving vehicle whisked by. Landing on the sidewalk in a roll, Anya came up into a kneeling position and peeked her head above the car's hood to scan the area. The dented, green luxury car that had just tried to kill her stopped and began backing up.
Definitely not an accident.
Anya took off in a run down the sidewalk. The green car made a backward turn in the middle of the street. The museum entrance was to the right, so she went straight, heading out of the plaza. Civilians could be put into a dangerous situation there. The car behind her gunned it. With a glance over her shoulder, Anya saw it jump the curb. The wheels tore up the landscape fronting the museum. Its tires spun in the soft ground, spitting up clods of grass in the vehicle's wake. Pumping her arms to increase her speed, Anya couldn't outrun the car, which was getting too close for comfort. To the right lay the museum grounds, to the left, the street, and a very familiar rental Jeep. The Jeep's driver waved frantically. Anya dodged right, and the car behind her stuck close. Garin drove slowly, marking her progress. She leaped into the open back bed of the Jeep. The car following her rammed into the back of the Jeep, and Garin put his foot down hard on the accelerator. Anya clutched the roll cage bar as the momentum slammed her body hard against the side of the bed. She climbed into the front seat.
Not surprised, and only a little offended you didn't invite me along for the chase.
You're here now. Stop complaining. Turn right. Take this scuffle away from the crowded plaza.
Ever concerned for the innocents.
Garin turned a hard right, the Jeep lifting high on its outer wheels before gunning it down a narrow street.
Who are we evading?
Not sure.
Did you look at him the wrong way?
I was minding my own business headed to the museum when he almost crushed me against a parked car.
Hardly the way to pick up a beautiful woman.
I'll say. Some men have no manners whatsoever.
I'll lose him down by the docks.
Anya focused on the green car coming up close behind them. Looked like an old model Mercury with a long, flat body. The license plate was obscured by mud, and the fender looked as if it had taken more than a few hits. The driver wore dark sunglasses and a bandana over his hair. Anya couldn't pick out any remarkable features. Anya hadn't told anyone that she was headed to the museum. He must have followed her from the hotel. Garin gained some distance from their tail and took another sharp turn.
Much less threatening than the bull.
What bull?
I narrowly avoided being gored a few hours ago.
What? Where? You were at the corrida?
No, I was on my way to the antiquities shop you suggested I visit. Kind of suspicious, wouldn't you say?
A bull came after you while you were shopping? So the whole bull in the china shop thing...
Yeah, that's not as funny as you think. The bull found me before I found the shop. I had to take it out before it trampled down a bunch of kids.
Well, that's good. Where'd it come from?
I have an idea. A certain sniper visited me afterward and let me know the bull had come from Cristo's ranch.
Taking another sharp turn, the Jeep shot under an iron bridge.
Do you know Cristo? Or for that matter, do you know anyone who might have Cristo sick a bull after me?
Anya, I thought I'd made myself clear. I trust Manuel.
I know, you two are friends and you choose your friends carefully. But why would Cristo want me dead?
You're not dead. Are you sure the bull didn't escape its cage while being transported through the city? All right. I sent you off shopping, which led you into danger. That is suspicious. Would you like me to ask Manuel about Cristo for you?
I don't understand how the ranch hand would be involved in this whole mess. Unless he sells illegal antiquities and felt I was getting too close to discovering him.
Cristo doesn't strike me as the sort who would be interested in bits of pots.
The votive crowns in El Bravo's sanctuary are not pot bits. And just because he sells them doesn't mean he has to have an interest in their fine aesthetic qualities. Maybe Ava was right and Cristo is hard up for money. If Cristo was involved in the sale of the crowns, he couldn't be that bad off now. No, I just don't understand the assistant's involvement.
We lost him.
Garin pulled the Jeep to a stop near a chain-link fence in front of a stretch of warehouses along the shore.
You're sure it was one of Cristo's bulls?
The brand was a half circle above a bar.
But is Cristo's brand?
Garin adjusted the rearview mirror to keep an eye out behind them.
I'm not keen on your involvement in this particular adventure, but if you like, I'll look into it.
Thank you.
I have a price.
Nope.
Come on, Anya. Don't be like that.
I know better. Your prices are too steep, and that's without tapping into my bank account.
Fine. You'll owe me one.
Garin drove onward, navigating a turn that took them beneath a streetlight defaced with red and white graffiti. They had driven far from the tourist areas. Anya peered over her shoulder, making sure the tail was nowhere in sight. A wooden box in the back seat caught her eye.
What's in the box?
A trinket.
Can I look?
Anya reached back and pulled the flat, wide box into her lap.
Don't you even want to hear what you're going to owe me? You're thinking about it. I love a curious woman.
Does it involve you dressing me for an event that has me tagging along awkwardly?
Dressing you, I've done. Now, do you want my help or not?
Her debt to Garin was sure to involve something for or with him. It could be as innocuous as attending another corrida, or it could involve an excursion that involved weapons and stealth. It might even mean getting dressed up and meeting dignitaries at a charity ball. The man's interests were eclectic, to say the least.
All right, name your price.
It's a research thing. Some dusty old artifact I got my hands on recently. I thought you could take a look at it for me.
Is it in this box?
No, that's just a trinket.
Seems like every time I take a look at an artifact for someone, bullets fly. Not to mention the local authorities develop an extreme dislike for me.
Is that a no?
What is this artifact you want me to look at?
It's unique. I don't have it with me, but we'll look forward to your visiting me in Berlin to assess it.
Deal. Next time I'm in Germany, it's a date. Now do I get to look in the box?
It's not locked.
Anya smoothed her palms over the box's polished wood surface. It was stained dark and stamped with a maker's mark unfamiliar to her. Two crossed swords inside a circle. Anya deferred lifting the cover as her mind sifted through the possibilities of what might lay inside. To Garin, a trinket could weigh 50 carats and have once hung around a queen's neck. Or it could be an 18th century solid gold pistol embossed with Garin's name. Or hell, why not a biological weapon he'd picked up for a song just because he could?
It's not going to leap out at you.
Was it obtained illegally?
Anya.
Pushing open the lid, she was initially relieved to merely find a piece of jewelry. Then she was disappointed that it didn't glitter with priceless jewels. It was an elaborate Art Nouveau piece, but the metal was bronze, in need of a polish, and the ivory pendant featured a hand-painted portrait.
Pretty. You a fan of the Art Nouveau style?
Not really.
Then it must be the woman in the portrait. Who is she?
Garin almost ran into a bicyclist loaded down with wicker baskets. He had to quickly spin the wheel to the left.
Well, well, she really must have meant something to you.
Obviously, he had known the woman in the portrait. In his time, Garin had accumulated a long list of conquests. Could this woman with the red hair and sensuous mouth have stolen his heart? Anya turned to place the jewelry box on the back seat.
Where are we headed?
We're here.
Garin pulled the jeep in front of a warehouse sided with bleached wood slats warped from the sea air.
I was in the area earlier, and this warehouse caught my attention. I thought it might hold some interest for you. Want to take a look inside?
Will I like what I see?
Probably not. There are usually only two workers here during the evening, according to... Let's go through the side door beyond the chain-link fence and greet them.
Have you previously introduced yourself to anyone inside?
No.
Garin walked beside Anya, his hand on the gun he wore concealed under his left arm. He strode with the confidence of a man you didn't want to mess with, especially if you were involved in bad things in an unassuming warehouse by the sea. They vaulted over the chain-link fence with ease and neared the dented, rusted door. A glance over her shoulder ensured the area was still and quiet.
Is this a guns-blazing scenario or a silent reconnaissance mission?
A little of both, I think. You cool with that?
Always.
Garin winked as he gripped the door handle and waited for her to signal her readiness with a nod. He lifted the door upward so its metal didn't scrape the asphalt and pulled it open far enough for Anya to slip inside. The setting sun didn't reach this area, but inside, hazy streaks of light beamed through cracks in the sea and wind-damaged tin roofing. Anya's fingers tingled to hold the sword. It had become a sort of sixth sense, cluing her to real and imminent danger. The warehouse was dark, but she heard no sound. Garin gestured for her to walk ahead, down an aisle of steel girders boasting vertical rows of empty steel shelving. It was difficult to guess what the warehouse may have originally been built for. Anya drew a small mag light from her backpack and flashed it from side to side. A curious scent lured her forward toward an open area. Formaldehyde. A good indication that there may be artifacts ahead. Unless somebody was embalming bodies. Here, near the end of the steel-girdered row, wooden packing crates of various sizes lined the shelves haphazardly. In addition, some pottery and even random human bones were laid out as if to await cataloging. Nothing stood out as particularly valuable. No gold or silver. Nothing Anya could place to a specific time period or age. None of the artifacts were tagged, and most of the objects had been set down carelessly, to judge from the broken pottery. But that didn't mean the valuable stuff hadn't already been culled. These racks could merely be where all the detritus ended up.
Most definitely an antiquities operation.
But the variety of artifacts was baffling.
Has all this been dug up in the Cadiz area? That's not possible.
The warehouse must be receiving from other locations.
As well as shipping out. A shipping and receiving hub?
Garin's hand on her shoulder made her turn around. Anya held the maglite between their faces. His expression indicated that he'd follow her. A metal conveyor belt snaked through the center of the warehouse, starting near the tin garage doors and ending at a line of tables, obviously used for sorting. The tables were stacked with crates and scattered with styrofoam packing material. In the midst of the white styrofoam pieces jutted a small bronze fertility statue Anya recognized as Mayan. Taking in the surroundings, she tracked along the walls and girders. She ran her gaze along the upper floor that featured a walkway across the nearest wall that probably led to offices and possibly roof access.
No one around. What if they stepped out the back for a coffee break?
It was well past siesta time, though she suspected this place didn't hold to normal work hours. Security was a must with an operation like this. They remained alert. Before Anya could step out from the girders toward the tables, Garin's grip on her upper arm tightened. She turned to follow his gaze. Smoke billowed from under the door through which they had entered. A fire had started behind them. Crashing through the closed double garage doors, a white van spun to a stop beside the tables. Three men wielding machine guns leaped out and started to toss the artifacts into the back of the vehicle, seemingly oblivious to Anya and Garin's presence not 30 feet away. Garin raised an arm, aiming at one of them. They hadn't yet been seen, or perhaps the fire had been started because someone had seen them enter. In any event, they were obviously collecting all they could before the place was consumed in an inferno.
Garin, don't. I want to get up to the office and see what I can find.
The building is on fire. Let me take them out, and then you can reclaim the treasures.
I'd rather find documents on previous sales and trades. Besides, what's on the tables doesn't look valuable.
What about that statue?
I have no idea if it's authentic. They're too busy gathering junk to notice we're here. Cover me.
With a nod, Garin reluctantly pulled up his aim. Anya slipped along the aisle of steel girders, aware she was completely in view of the looters, but confident that they were more intent on their grab-and-go. She jumped onto the bottom step. Anya ducked. The looters didn't even pause. They swept all the articles into the van in such a manner that nothing could have survived without sustaining damage. Tracking up the stairs, Anya found the door to the office locked. She timed her kick to coincide with the slamming of the van's back doors. Inside, the room was empty. Slatted plastic window shades hung broken, revealing a slash of illumination from the bright light outside. Anya ran to the next door. She kicked it open, only to find yet another empty room.
Who would leave the place unguarded? Either this operation has been in the process of clearing out, or they've been overtaken by an entirely different group. Probably the same men who are ransacking the place. And yet, someone has been keeping an eye on it to be able to charge in and save what they could. Why didn't they stop me and Garin from entering? Did we arrive just moments before the others? Or did someone tip them off about our visit? Garin? No, he doesn't want me dead. Not today, anyway.
The only answer was that they were not aware of Anya and Garin, had set the building on fire, and were quickly clearing out the evidence. Backing out of the room, Anya spied something behind the door and grabbed it. A cell phone that still held a charge. She went straight to the contacts, scrolled through a dozen Spanish names and a few she recognized as Egyptian, and she landed on a familiar name.
James Harlow. Interesting.
Tucking the phone in her pocket, Anya backtracked down the steps as the van revved its engine. She arrived by Garin's side. And he shoved her hard. Anya landed on all fours, as did he. Bullets flew past their heads, ricocheting off the metal conveyor.
Now can I shoot someone?
Go for it.
Garin popped his head up and fired the heckler in coke. The van swerved as a bullet nicked but didn't blow the tire. Anya tried to get a look at the driver, but the van had already cleared the loading dock.
Follow them!
They raced out to the Jeep and got in.
What was in the upper room?
A cell phone with a list of contacts.
Garin turned the Jeep around and trailed the van, which picked up speed and swerved into traffic.
You think they destroyed their own operation?
Possibly, but I'm wondering if another operation looted this one. On the other hand, there were no signs of a struggle and not a single dead body. The offices were bare, as if someone had wanted to remove all evidence. And the guys in the van seemed completely unaware of our presence, so I think they were focused on making a fast getaway.
Anya glanced back at the flaming warehouse.
They had to be trafficking in artifacts from all over. The assortment of items was too random.
Could have been.
I wish you'd have taken a picture before, when the place was intact.
Hey, I was doing you a favor by bringing you here.
Which I will repay, apparently, next time I'm in Berlin.
Glad you haven't already forgotten our deal.
Anya clutched the overhead hand grip as they swerved onto another street, this one cluttered with market stalls. They slowed to a crawl.
Garin, if you were inside earlier, you know that implicates you.
I didn't go inside. I drove around the place. Ah, hell.
Garin stopped abruptly, shifted in his seat to look over his shoulder, and began to back up.
What?
You know where we're headed.
No, I...
She eyed the building ahead. It was familiar. She'd been inside it twice already. The white van drove around behind.
They were with the police?
If the police had been out to the dig site and had murdered Simon Klosky, then this was an obvious connection to the same dirty dealings. And yet, why would they return to the police station knowing they'd been followed? Not very stealthy. Behind them, the white van passed on the street fronting the station.
They were taking us on a goose chase.
Maybe.
Garin shifted and turned the Jeep around. Anya pulled that cell phone out of her pocket. James Harlow had commented that the police were always helpful whenever he'd needed them. He couldn't prove that whoever was in the white van was the police. And if it had been, the snatch at the warehouse could have been an official seizure. No. If that were the case, they would have gone in with badges and guns.
You got yourself in a fine mess.
Garin backed the Jeep into an alley. He shifted and drove out the opposite way from the police station. Garin listened, flashed Anya the evil eye, and stepped on the accelerator. He swerved down a side street and gunned it.
Maybe they alerted fellow officers we were on their tail, and that's why they led us right to the station.
Doesn't feel right. That would imply the entire department was dirty.
Garin pulled the Jeep over to the curb. A red fire engine blazed past them, followed by two patrol cars. Not in pursuit of them.
Never a dull moment with you, Anya.
It's why you like me.
It is one of many reasons to like you. And yet...
She caught his look in the rearview mirror. Twisting, she spied the white van gunning down the street.
I don't think they're police.
You could be right. Hold on.
Garin swerved the Jeep sharply, turning down yet another dark alleyway.
Here.
Garin handed her his Heckler & Koch, the standard weapon issued by the Spanish Army.
Aim for a tire.
Got it.
Anya leaned out the window. A bullet ricocheted off the Jeep's trunk. She adjusted her position to use the roll bar as protection across her chest and fired. The van swerved, but corrected its front wheels and came right back in line with them. Return fire took out Garin's side mirror.
Change in tactics.
Garin gunned the accelerator.
Why don't you pull over and face them down?
I like your thinking, but I have a passenger to protect.
I can protect myself.
Not from the weaponry in the car behind us. They're not cops. They're probably from the warehouse, taking down the place and covering their tracks.
Maybe they think we were the ones looting the place?
Could be. Sit tight, Anya. I'll get us out of here.
Then don't turn...
Garin turned onto a dock. He was too busy concentrating on getting away and swerving from bullet fire to realize he was now driving right toward the sea. There were no turnoffs, and the van had taken the same turn.
Hell, I don't know this area at all. You want to jump or ride it out?
Anya eyed the car and their tail. If they jumped, they risked getting shot. If they rode it out, there was only the sea to catch them. It wouldn't be deep close to the shore, but deep enough for ships to moor. The impact wouldn't kill them, and then they'd have a chance to swim for safety under the dock. Anya pulled the seatbelt across her lap and buckled it.
Ride it out, Velma!
Sure thing, Louise.
Garin jammed his foot on the accelerator and the Jeep sped toward the end of the dock, past the warning signs not to drive farther. The van tailing them skidded to a stop, and the man in the passenger seat popped his head out to watch as Anya felt the Jeep's wheels leave the end of the wooden dock and soar through the air. The Jeep hit the water grill first and plunged straight down, the sea sucking the vehicle in like quicksand.
You okay?
Yes!
Anya unlocked her seatbelt as the sea gushed through the open windows and swallowed them into the cold water. Her head went under, and the shocking chill punched her in the lungs. Grasping the top of the door, Anya twisted and pulled her shoulders and torso out through the window. But her boot was hung up on the seatbelt. Anya wiggled and tugged, but as the jeep sank, it pulled her down with it. Then something snaked around her calf, and she felt her body being pulled down. Initially, panicking and kicking, Anya relaxed when she realized it was a hand. The seatbelt slackened, and her ankle was twisted free. Her hind end was given a shove to push her completely out of the window and up toward the silvery glow of the surface. As Anya neared the surface, instinct reminded her that she couldn't simply pop her head up. Whoever was in that van was likely waiting above with their guns aimed. The darkness would provide some cover, but the moon was high, and a glint on her water-soaked head could reveal their location. Anya angled a shoulder toward shore and kicked, propelling herself through the water at the depth of about 10 feet. Arms cutting through the murky waters, she finally made it to darkness and determined she was under the dock. Arrowing her head upward, she kicked and rose slowly. Garin emerged beside her. Overhead, the dock boards blocked any observer's view of them.
You must have iron lungs, Anya.
And I suppose being immortal, you could have wandered around underwater for hours?
Longer than most. Hell, I forgot the necklace.
Garin dove back under.
Don't go back! Stubborn medieval warrior.
Anya swam over to the piling and wrapped an arm around it. It was coated with slimy seaweed, but it anchored her to one spot. She was able to stop kicking and collect her breath. Their pursuers must have been satisfied with their success. Except they couldn't expect that she and Garin had died in their plunge. But Garin still wasn't out of trouble.
What is he doing?
The necklace's sentimental value must have been greater than Anya had guessed. Nearly 10 minutes passed. And then a head surfaced 30 yards out. Garin swam toward shore, using long shore strokes, and then passed by her position. She followed, and they climbed up onto the smooth, head-sized rocks lining the beachfront and sat. Wet clothing slapping her skin, Anya felt the evening breeze chill through to her bones. Garin slammed the jewelry box onto the sand beside the rock he'd sat on.
Damn it!
It should be okay. It wasn't under for long.
Anya picked up the box and opened it up. Seawater poured out. The necklace wasn't inside.
It's not in there, is it?
Sorry.
Easy come, easy go.
I can go down with you for a few more dives before it gets too dark.
The shore drops significantly 30 yards from here. I must have dived 60 feet. It's lost. And anyway, I'm sure the water has already damaged the paint on the porcelain.
Garin rose and shook his arms, which splattered water over Anya's head.
I'm out of here. I should have driven you straight to the airport on the mainland instead of to that warehouse.
Garin found purchase on the tumble of rocks lining the shore.
You're barking up the wrong tree, Anya. El Bravo isn't your man. And even if he were, you're not the police.
I don't suspect he's involved with the stolen artifacts in the warehouse. But the votive crowns were obtained illegally.
So are 75% of the artifacts on display in people's homes across the world.
Listen.
Anya lurched after him, squeezing the water out of her t-shirt.
I get that you have a friendship with Bravo. I won't ask you to do anything that would jeopardize that friendship.
No, you won't. Because I won't be seeing you again during this visit. And I suggest you leave town as fast as you can find a flight, because the police might be chasing you.
How do I know they weren't after you?
You've got me there. You don't know that.
It wasn't the police. They would never have risked taking us around behind the police station. And I'm not leaving Cadiz.
Anya, just stay away from Manuel Bravo. Promise me that.
I can't.
Garin spun on her and gripped Anya by the upper arm, squeezing hard. She knew he could snap her humerus bone with a simple twist of his wrist.
You're hurting me.
So make me stop. Slash your pretty little sword toward me and...
Anya kneed him in the thigh. Her energy had been depleted from the swim, but she made contact with the femoral artery, and it was enough to make him grit his teeth and wince. It broke his grip from her arm. Bringing up her elbow, she smashed it under his jaw. He followed with a roundhouse that connected with the back of his arm but didn't cause him to falter. He gripped her by the back of the head and shoved her. Her boots slick and her laces untied, Anya tripped. She tumbled onto the stones. The desire to draw the sword would only give Garin a satisfaction Anya didn't want to deliver.
You don't get to win this one, Brayden.
I'd say it's been a pleasure, but that would be a lie.
Thanks for the warehouse information, Garin. If you talk to Rue, tell him I said hello.
Garin didn't acknowledge her and turned to stomp away across the sand. He stalked up the beach, crossing through a block of warehouses, and hoofed it back to the Seaside Strip's hotels. Best place to hail a cab. With a few shakes of his cell phone, the thing actually powered up. Waterproof to 100 feet. Nice. Garin dialed Hannibal Drake and got his voicemail. He tried a few more numbers, getting the same result.
I saw your message. I only get one call.
One call? Don't tell me.
I am sitting in the bloody clink. The police have arrested me on charges of illicit antiquities trading.
Damn. I was calling to warn you that the warehouse next to your office went up in flames, but I guess you already know that.
The police swarmed the area like bees.
Be careful, Hannibal. The police may not be clean.
Good to know. But I'm clean, which is all that matters. Well, basically. I'll be out of here as soon as I give them James Harlow's name.
Is he a professor?
Works at the City Museum. My nemesis.
Is there anything I can do for you, Hannibal? A lawyer? Bail?
I've got it covered. Thanks, Braden. Enjoy the necklace.
The walk to the hotel had been uncomfortable as her cotton khaki pants dried and the seawater made her skin itch. In her room, Anya stripped bare and wrapped a towel around her torso, but didn't immediately jump into the shower. Garin's insistence that El Bravo was innocent niggled at her.
Did one of the Matador's votive crowns come from the Seaside Warehouse?
There was no way to know without tracking down the source. The same went for the bronze bull statue. Whoever had looted Crockett's site may have been located in the dock warehouse. They could have handed off the booty to a dealer or arranged for the delivery of the statue directly.
So the bull statue traveled from outside Jerez to a warehouse to Diego's hands, or from Jerez directly to a dealer's hands, who then gave it to Diego to deliver to whom? Obviously not the same person who stole the crown from the crate.
Anya was aware of two people who had an interest in collecting bull-related artifacts, Manuel Bravo and James Harlow. And after finding Harlow's number on the cell phone in the warehouse, she wasn't certain anymore that El Bravo was the key player.
They could both be involved. Bravo wanted the crown and Harlow the bull. After I showed him pictures of the bull statue, did that pique Harlow's interest enough to send looters out to the site to steal it? Is he capable of ordering a murder?
Anya didn't see it, but then she didn't know him very well. About as well as she had known Jonathan Crockett. And Harlow seemed determined to place blame for some kind of criminal activity on Crockett.
To deflect the blame from himself? And how does El Bravo figure in all of this? A man who insists that all the artifacts he owns are gifts.
She hadn't found the replica shop. Anya's suspicion that the story of the shop was all a lie was strongly bolstered by her encounter with a 1,000-pound bull.
Time to pay the Matador a visit and get to the bottom of this. I hope Garin decided to go club hopping this evening instead of visiting his friend.
Aware that there was no fight this evening and that it was late, Anya wasn't sure she'd find Señor Bravo at home. He could be out carousing or seducing a beautiful woman right now. He could have someone at his villa. Didn't matter. Anya was through with tiptoeing. Could she show up unannounced and expect to be admitted? Tomorrow was the big exhibition honoring the Matador. He was slated to face 6 of the bulls in the arena. It would also be his 100th corrida of the season. One of her quandaries was resolved. The butler let Anya in.
This way, please.
The butler served her lemonade out on the patio under the glowing paper lanterns and went to get Manuel. 20 minutes passed before the lithe Matador appeared, buttoning up a loose white shirt. He wore slouchy jeans that wilted over his bare feet, and he would have looked like a regular beach bum if it hadn't been for the slicked back black hair. He sat and put his feet up on the wicker table.
Creed? How's the lemonade? Tart enough?
It tastes fresh squeezed.
Of course it is. I always demand the finest. What are you doing here? And so late?
I was wondering if you'd allow me another look at the Visigothic votive crowns you display in your sanctuary.
Why?
As I've told you, I'm an archaeologist. I study medieval arts. It's my specialty. The Visigothic crowns date back to the 7th century and earlier. I've only ever seen the crowns in museums. I didn't get a chance to look closely at the ones you own when I was here the other day, and, well, I'm a curious girl.
They are replicas. I cannot understand why they would prove of scholarly importance to you.
I know you believe them, fakes. Garin gave me the address to the antiques shop in the old town, but I wasn't able to find it. You said the artifacts you own are all gifts. What about the crowns?
I don't recall. I own so many pieces, you understand. It's late.
I know. I apologize. I had plans to fly out tomorrow after the fight, and I'd hate to leave Cadiz without knowing if I could have had a chance to examine the crowns more closely, perhaps even take a few pictures.
I thought I made it clear to you, Senorita Creed. I don't like it when people touch my things.
I won't touch them, I promise. I have latex gloves with me. Please?
Manuel eyed her through narrowed lids. Everything about his attitude toward her had flipped on its head. No longer charming and interested, now he was guarded and cold. Anya once again felt as if she stood before a bull, without a cape. Out back by the fence, she saw a figure stride along the side of the barn, shadowed to a black silhouette in the darkness.
Is that your assistant, Cristo?
He's teaching a novice tomorrow. He's doing some last-minute preparations tonight.
You don't do that. Teach, I mean.
I don't have the time. Cristo is a matador. He's my best banderillero.
I understand he owns a bull ranch on the mainland?
His family has bred toros for decades. They are substandard.
You'd never stand before one in the ring?
No.
I was chased down the street by a bull as I was looking for the antiques shop. I think the brand on its hindquarter was from Cristo's ranch.
Is that so? A bull was loose on the streets of Cadiz. When? Are you all right?
I'm fine, but there were children in the area. They almost became collateral damage.
You say that as if you believe someone set the bull on you.
Señor Bravo, how often does a bull suddenly appear in the street?
Around here. More often than you would guess.
And yet there's no stadium in Cadiz.
There are a few ranches along the coast. But Cristo's ranch is on the mainland. It couldn't have been one of his. I'm glad that you weren't harmed, and that the children are safe.
Thank you. The bull's brand was a half circle above a bar.
That's quite startling. That is Cristo's brand.
Believe me, it was startling to find myself standing before a full-size bull who apparently had not seen a person on foot before.
You think it was a ring-bred bull?
It charged movement.
As would most any bull.
I caped it with a colorful skirt. The Murillo was exceptionally large.
I see. I'll speak to Cristo directly.
May we first look at the votive grounds? Would you mind?
I sense you will not give up otherwise.